Monday Punday strikes again on The Inner Life. Just a reminder, if you have a pun to share, send it to me, along with your name, city, and home parish by clicking on the link on our show page at relevantradio.com/innerlife. Here's today's offering. The Academy Awards were last night, with Oppenheimer doing very well. The film is a war thriller about J. Robert Oppenheimer and his role in the development of the atomic bomb. And hey, you know what? It turns out Oppenheimer was a real historical person. All along, I've been told that he was just a theoretical physicist.
Helping you grow deeper on your spiritual journey. Welcome to The Inner Life with Patrick Conley.
Well, welcome to The Inner Life. Glad you could join us for some encouragement and inspiration, if not in the form of a pun, hopefully in other ways, for living out your Catholic faith today. I'm your host, Patrick Conley. Well, you know, one of the genre of films that frequently misses out on Oscars is sci-fi movies. There have been a few that have won the prestigious award, but not many. Now, I like sci-fi movies. I wouldn't consider myself necessarily an avid fan, but I've taken in my fair share of them. Well, one thing some sci-fi movies posit in their futuristic worldview is a different manner that humans will ingest bodily nourishment. Oftentimes, instead of seeing a sci-fi character sit down to some sort of lavish meal, you'll see them taking a pill or some sort of dehydrated rations that supposedly contain all that the body needs to keep going. And I never bought it. I mean, for me, there was just far too much pleasure in eating. The taste, the smell, the texture of so many different foods, to believe that humans of the future would simply do away with the time and trouble of preparing and eating an actual meal. And if you add into that the pleasure to be had when we sit down to a meal in the company of loved ones, it becomes even harder to imagine that we'd be better off just swallowing a pill. Meals together with family and loved ones can be a strong foundation from which to build family life. I'm sure you have some treasured memories of eating together. Maybe a first date with the man or woman who's now your spouse. Maybe an exotic meal with your family on a memorable vacation. Maybe a holiday feast with extended family. Or maybe just the routine of family meals around the dinner table in your home. But, as we'll see today on the show, there's also a spiritual element to family meals. Breaking bread with loved ones feeds not just the body, but the soul as well. Today on the show, we're examining the spiritual benefits of family meals with our spiritual director for the hour, Father Dave Heaney. Father Dave is a priest for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles and has a master's degree in marriage, family, and child counseling from the University of Southern California. He currently serves as the pastor of St. Bruno Catholic Church in Whittier, California. Morning, Father Dave. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Glad to be with you.
I know. This is going to be a fun topic, I think. Family meals, yeah?
Oh, yeah. It was very, very, very big in my family growing up. One of my best memories is our family meals. I think it was much more common growing up in my time. But hopefully if we can talk about it and inspire more families to get back to that wonderful tradition, that'd be great.
Yeah, amen to that. Well, let's start with Jesus. Now, Jesus was no stranger to food. Let's start with his food miracles. For example, the feeding of the 5,000. What do we learn about Jesus kind of performing miracles specifically around food?
Well, you know, you can imagine that had to be one of the most powerful things that Jesus did at that time because, you know, unlike today, you know, we can go to, you know, the local grocery store and, the local convenience store and pick up items to eat. But in those days, you know, food anxiety was very common. If the crop didn't come in and there was a plague, there was no food anywhere. Mm. And so archaeologists call this food anxiety. It was a really big problem. The fear of famine. So when Jesus feeds 5,000 people from just a small amount, he's communicating something powerful there. And that is, in the kingdom of God, it's going to be about abundance. Mm. It's not going to be about famine or want or lack. It's going to be about abundance. And to symbolize that with food just really had to be extremely powerful. The other thing that Jesus does is that miracle that's very, very important is that when people experience lack or they don't have something, they become very envious of the person next door who does.
Huh, yeah.
You know, I don't have a good car. I'm envious of that person who does. I don't have a big house. I'm envious of that person who does. I can't afford a big meal. I'm envious of that person who does. And so, you know, one small boy in that crowd of 5,000 had a little bit of food. And maybe Jesus was overhearing things like, hey, that little kid has food. I don't have any. I hate that kid.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm envious of that kid. And so what Jesus does is he brings peace to the crowd by having so much food that people are saying, you know, I have more than I need. How can I give some to you? And so abundance just brings peace, and it brings generosity and charity. Mm. So that miracle has so much more than just, you know, solving people's hunger.
Yeah.
It had such symbolic meaning of abundance in the kingdom of God, which ends envy, which ends jealousy, and brings peace. Beautiful miracle.
Yeah, I like it. Very good. All right, well then, what about the wedding at Cana? That's another thing that springs to mind here, the changing of water into wine at the wedding at Cana. Yeah, what about that one, Father?
Well, here we are again dealing with lack. You know, they have no more wine. It's just a terrible thing for a family to admit. You know, I mean, it's embarrassing, you know, besides, you know, and also it brings the party to an end. And so Jesus does two things. He creates an abundant 6 stone water jars. I mean, this is like 600 gallons of wine. I wish I was at that reception myself. So, he creates this amazing abundance, but it's also a way of saying, let the party continue. Let this celebration go on. We don't want it to come to an end. So it's a beautiful signal to married couples that he wants you to be happy forever, and that it will come from this feeling of abundance that comes from having that spirit of Jesus, that the Holy Spirit within you. Then you feel full, and all you think about is, how can I give my love to other people, as opposed to kind of focusing on what I don't have. Mm-hmm. So these are two miracles about abundance.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. Well, I'm getting more and more convinced by the moment, Father. It's very good. And
Are you getting hungry?
I'm getting hungry. And I'm a little envious of you, too, being out there in California and wine country yourself. Although we have some pretty good wineries here in the Midwest as well, I must say. Absolutely. Talking about family meals today and the spiritual benefits of family meals with our spiritual director, Father Dave Heaney. How have family dinners brought you closer to God and one another? Give us a story. If you've got a question maybe about how to enrich your meals with your family or how to get going in doing family meals, give us a call. Our toll-free studio line is 888-914-9149. That line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters. Again, the number is 888-914-9149. Or, as always, you can send us an email if you'd prefer. Our email address is innerlife@relevantradio.com. Well, Father, of course, and we're coming up on Holy Thursday here in a pretty short amount of time. Mm-hmm. And one of the last things that Jesus does with his disciples before he was arrested and, of course, underwent his passion was to have a meal with them. So let's talk a little bit about the Last Supper. What do we learn about Jesus and a meal there?
Yeah, we don't want to overlook that or just take it for granted that, you know, Jesus sits down for a Last Supper. He could have chosen any kind of human activity as what he would leave the church after he ascends into heaven. But he chooses a meal, and he makes it sacred. He kind of changes the Seder meal into a new experience that he asks the church to do every day. Do this in memory of me. So it's a primordial, and I think the basic thing we can say about food, you know, going back to the miracle of the 5,000 and even the wedding at Cana, food means that life will go on. If you don't have food, life comes to an end. So food has this extremely primordial symbolic event, meaning that that I'm going to be nourished, that I'm going to have what my body needs, and that I can go on. So it's a perfect way of, you know, talking about the nourishment that bread and wine gives us and the nourishment that the body and blood gives us. To our soul. So they all come together in the Last Supper based on the Seder meal, which is food for the journey that the Israelites had on their exodus from Egypt. And so our Mass is our food for our journey that inspires us to go out after Mass is over and to change the world. Mm-hmm. And it comes from that beautiful meal that we have in church.
Yeah, yeah. I love it. And I love the thought of that. And it's a good thing to keep in mind that this is obviously this Seder meal was deeply rooted in the Jewish understanding, the Jewish tradition as well. And then Jesus takes that and fulfills it, completes it, brings it to perfection, right, in the Last Supper. Yeah. Well, why would you say, if someone asked you, Father, because I'm asking you right now, why would you say that sharing a meal specifically with family or loved ones is a sacred thing? Would you call it a sacred thing? And if so, why?
I would call it a sacred thing because it is necessary for life. And our life comes from God, and we have to keep that life going. We have to nourish it. We have to protect it. We have to take care of it. And, you know, I mean, think of it this way. I mean, what is one of the most primordial events that a new parent has is feeding their child. And that feeding is the kind of the very first practical way that a parent expresses love for their child. I'm going to feed you because I want you to grow. I want you to be strong. I want you to be nourished. I'm going to give you what your body needs. Mm-hmm. So it is so rooted and deeply connected to this idea that life will go on. So I think it just makes it very sacred because it just means that the life that God created will continue. So, you know, there's what God does. He creates our life. And then there's what we do, which is we have to take care of it. So it's a cooperative event. I think that's just very important that we are cooperating in God's plan by making sure that we are eating well and taking care of our body, our physical body, in the way it should be. You know, food is also highly pleasurable. It just profoundly feels good to eat.
It does. not contradicting you there, Father, certainly.
We have to keep things in moderation, you know, in medias tot virtu. So, you know, we don't want too little to be anorexic. We don't want to be too much to be obese. So just the right amount. But to savor it, to prepare it well so it tastes good, it's just really, really wonderful. I think this idea of food, you know, is so important for life and so pleasurable is expressed beautifully in the scriptures in these two very important verses from John 10:10 and John 15:11, where Jesus says, he basically declares why he bothered to come to planet Earth. That's an important, why has he come here? And he says, I have come that you might have life and life to the fullest, mm-hmm. and I have come that you might have joy and joy that is complete. So food continues our life and it brings us joy. And so really it's a very primordial thing. Don't take it for granted. You know, really kind of come to understand how important it is. And that I think that'll help you enjoy it more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very good. And one of the things that we base this whole idea of, I mean, it's a regular, it's factored into our very being that we have this need. But it's a need that, again, is what we're addressing today on the show, is a need that addresses our physical needs, of course, but especially when shared with loved ones, I mean, it addresses a very profound spiritual need as well. Talking about family meals today here on the program with our spiritual director, Father Dave Heaney, when was a time when you've had maybe a family meal that was really stuck in your mind as a really important and special one? Give us a call. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. Maybe you have a question about how to do family meals. How can you enrich it even further? And maybe some practices that you can incorporate into your family meals. Give us a call too. 888-914-9149. Father, I'm just curious. You mentioned at the outset of the show that this was a very important part of your own growing up. And what were family meals like for you when you were growing up?
They were outstanding. And I grew up at a time, admittedly, you know, in the 50s and 60s, early 70s, when family meals were much more common. It was, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have, 150 cable TV shows to watch. people were generally home. There wasn't as much youth activities in terms of sports and stuff as there is now. So we pretty much had a family meal every night. It was, it was a kind of a family norm, you know, everybody's expected to be there at the dinner time. But one thing that I was always grateful for is that my family was highly, this sounds counterintuitive, but my family was highly political. Okay. We watched the news, we were into the news, we followed the news a lot. And my dad was a scientist, so he liked lively discussion and questioning things. And so literally every night he would throw out the inflammatory statement. And nice. We would go at it. And it was respectful, but it was, I learned to express my ideas. And it was often, there was only four of us in the family. So it was usually my mother and myself versus my brother and my dad.
Okay.
We had a lot of things to talk about then, Vietnam War and Nixon and hippies and drugs and politics and things like that, communism. So I learned to speak my mind. I learned to express my opinions, to not be silent, but to be respectful. I also learned how to listen. So we wouldn't talk over people. We would listen to what that person says. And sometimes they might say, how can you say that? What about this? What about that? At the time, it was just a lot of fun. But looking back on it now, I'm so grateful for it because, you know, most of the talks that I give around the church here are on controversial moral topics. Mm-hmm. And so I learned how to express things clearly. And then if I'm giving a talk and someone challenges me on what I'm saying, I always say, well, you're making me feel right at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just learned to not be afraid of challenges, not to be afraid of questions. Not every family has that. Sometimes we would have guests over for dinner and they would be startled at the kind of lively discussion. But I think it was, for me, it helped me in my later life. It strengthened my ability to have opinions, to stand on them, to be able to express them, also to listen respectfully to other people. And all of that came from that experience of the family meal. So we can talk more about that and just how good and how powerful and how effective it can be in family health.
Absolutely. Let's take a phone call here before we get into that, Father. Don is calling in from Chicago. Don, welcome to The Inner Life. Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you. I was reading, I think it was in John, how Lazarus, who is described as a good friend of Jesus, was reclining at table with him or breaking bread with him. And I believe the timing was, this was at some point after Jesus rose Lazarus from the dead. And you have to wonder what they talked about. But is that correct? Is that your understanding? It was after
I'm not sure myself. I don't think there's much about Lazarus before that experience. So that you could be right. You know, we could be wrong. I mean, maybe somebody, a caller, can correct us on that. But certainly Lazarus, you know, was raised from the dead. But we say that he was resuscitated so that when he came back from the dead, he basically had the same kind of body that he had before, meaning that he needed a nourishment. As opposed to Jesus, who rose from the dead as a resurrected, as a glorified body, something different. So Lazarus would have died again. He wasn't resurrected. He was resuscitated, as we say. So Lazarus would have died again, but prior to that time, he would have eaten meals like everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. And yes, I just checked it out quickly. So you are correct on it. This is from John chapter 12, and it said that Jesus came to Bethany where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Right. They gave a dinner for him there, and Martha served while Lazarus was one of those reclining at table with him. So, yep. Yeah, and I would imagine, as Don points out, they would have had something very interesting to talk about too, wouldn't they have?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to be a fly on the wall for that conversation would be great.
That's great. It's a great point, Don. I love that, and I love pointing out or thinking about using some of your Ignatian imagination there, putting yourself in the scene and just and thinking about what was going on, what was the conversation like around that table. Yeah. So, Don, thanks so much for the call. We're talking about family meals today. When was a time when you shared a meal with family that really sticks in your head as significant, not just for the food that you ate, but also for the fellowship that you enjoyed with your loved ones? Give us a call. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. Again, 888-914-9149. Or send us an email, innerlife@relevantradio.com. More to come in the conversation with Father Dave Heaney on family meals coming up right after this. Our sponsor, the University of Dallas, the Catholic University for Independent Thinkers, invites high school juniors, seniors, and recent graduates to study the great books this summer at UD's two-week-long Arete program. while earning 3 hours of college credit. Info at relevantradio.com/UDallas.
Welcome back to The Inner Life with Patrick Conley. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149.
Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by.
Welcome back to The Inner Life. Little CSNY for us there, and a rejoin. Thanks to Nick for that. And we're talking about family and teaching your children well. And we're speaking with Father Dave Heaney, who is our spiritual director today, specifically about family meals. But as we're talking about family, Father, there must be a lot of people who come to you looking for advice on how to build the family. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And as you mentioned at the top of the program, I do have a master's degree from USC in marriage and family and child counseling.
Sure, right.
So I can summarize, you know, that $50,000 program.
Here it comes. How much are you charging for this, Father?
Yeah. People ask me if I'm a Trojan fan, and I say that school was so expensive, I feel more like a part owner.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
But often families say, you know, there's so much to know, family psychology and everything. Is there just one thing that we can do that has the biggest effect? And that's an easy answer, and it is the family meal, because it's the one time when everybody's together and they are interacting. That's a lot different from movie night, when you may be all in the same room, but you're watching a film. But here in a meal, you are usually sitting around a table facing each other, and who's there? You know, the older people and the younger people. And so there's a great learning thing that happens here. So young people learn, first of all, how to interact, because they have examples of their older brothers and sisters or parents to teach them, you know, how to behave at the table, how to listen, how to speak. So it's really the way young people kind of learn, you know, social skills from the first time. And then, you know, brothers and sisters learn to talk with each other. Older children learn to be patient, you know, with the younger ones. Mm-hmm. So all kinds of good skills happen at a meal, and it's around this something that's very pleasurable. And if they're smart, they might make the family meal something that the family actually makes together.
Mm.
So that you have age-appropriate skills for each of the children to kind of participate in putting the meal together. You know, and it could be something just simple as, you know, getting things from the cupboard for younger children. You know, don't forget, a kitchen has a hot stove and knives in it, so you have to be careful what the kids are doing. But, you know, kind of, and then it also builds a family tradition. They have a sense that, yes, this is what we do. Now, maybe it's not every night, but if it's like one night a week or two nights a week, you can say, yes, our family always had Sunday dinner. That's a very famous Italian thing.
Yeah.
Or our family had Tuesday tacos. You know, companies do that now because they know how powerful it is for their employees to interact with each other. So they invent this thing called Taco Tuesday. So it's, you know, companies know that it's good for the bottom line. There must be something there. So if it's good economically for the company, we know it's good psychologically and socially for the family too.
Mm-hmm.
So if it hasn't happened yet, you can start at any time and start slow. And start simple. Could be just pizza night.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember, you know, it also has to do with the cooking abilities of the family. Maybe you go to a restaurant. You know,
yeah.
But it's worth thinking about. It's worth starting if you haven't already. And if you are doing it, just let me congratulate you and just say that you are doing the right thing.
Talking about the spiritual benefits of family meals today on the program, if you have an example to give of some way that you practice family meals, what is the routine in your family? Give us a call and let us know what that is. Encourage and inspire one another at 888-914-9149. Again, 888-914-9149. Now, Father, I guess when we're talking family meals, it's very easy to think of maybe just the ideal, right? Because I'm sort of a Norman Rockwell 1950s idyllic situation in which the parents and kids are all gathered around, there's smiles on everybody's faces. And but I think everybody, every family knows that that's not always the case. There can be challenges that make coming, even coming together as a family, difficult. And even when we gather around the table, there can be, yeah, arguments, disagreements, there can be messes and that sort of thing. So what would you say are some of the main challenges to family meals?
Well, first of all, let me say if there's a problem in the family, then you are in good company, because at the Last Supper, we did have one person leave to betray Jesus, right? And then you had all the other disciples going, is it I, Lord? Is it I, Lord? You know, kind of an arrogant sense of it couldn't possibly be me. So, you know, Jesus had issues with his own kind of family of disciples as well. So they were hardly Norman Rockwell. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Norman Rockwell paintings were popular because people might say, well, my family is not like that, but I would like it to be that way. Huh. So it was kind of held out as a goal, as kind of, let's move towards that goal. Just because our family is not Norman Rockwell. And, you know, for viewers who don't know, Norman Rockwell, you know, years ago, mainly in the 50s and 60s, painted these very idyllic, romantic, beautiful views of all kinds of different aspects of life, but frequently around family life. Mm-hmm. So just because it's not ideal, Jesus' family was not ideal. The disciples were all over the place in terms of their loyalty and depth of faith. And of course, Judas, we all know what he did. Mm-hmm. So don't let that be a discouragement. It's just something to work on. So wherever you are, just move to the next place. Wherever you are in the family meal dynamic, you know, just take it up a notch. If you're doing it one night a week, maybe make it a little bit more. If one person is doing all the cooking, maybe invite more family members to participate. No matter what their age, there's always something they can do to help make it happen. It's a great thing to teach etiquette and politeness. If it's something that really can't happen at home, then just go to a restaurant. And there's restaurants at every economic level that you can go to. And that's a great place to teach etiquette to young children about how to act in public. Mm-hmm. You know, how to be polite, how to give your order to the waitress or the server, waiter. And it's just an opportunity for so many, many good things to happen. So, you know, if you haven't started, please consider all these ideas to start. And if you are doing it, congratulations. And, you know, maybe even do even more family meals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Well, and one of the things, too, I think off the bat is that, well, Catechism itself, paragraph 2685, says that the Christian family is the first place of education in prayer. Right. And that could be a great way of introducing the regularity of prayer, even by just pausing to give thanks for the meal.
Yeah, different people can take turns saying the prayer. It's a beautiful way of listening to each person's kind of level of spirituality. Mm-hmm. And of course, the great model for that would be the parents. You know, they would start and kind of show like what is grace. And, you know, by the way, if you do go to a restaurant, that's a really powerful thing to do at a restaurant as well, mm-hmm. especially starting with the sign of the cross. You know, sometimes you'll see people bow their head in a restaurant, but when they make the sign of the cross, they are telling everyone in the restaurant that we are Catholic. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful sign, a beautiful witness. And that's our role, that's our mission, is to be, you know, Catholics in the world, to show our faith wherever we are. So for a family to do that is just really powerful. Yeah. So I certainly recommend that. But saying prayer before, sometimes families will say prayer at the end of meal too. That's a beautiful thing to do. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a signal that the meal is over and everybody can go. So maybe before and after, beautiful tradition. Certainly before, teaches children to appreciate, and it actually teaches children to have this really incredibly beautiful virtue, which is gratitude. Mm. Children sometimes can be the first to take things for granted. You know, we always have this, we always have that. But then to say, you know, to thank someone, you know, above for the goodness that we have, begins to teach them to say thank you. and that beautiful virtue of gratitude. All these things happen at a family meal, how powerful it is.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of great stuff going on at family meals, which is why it's our focus of the show today. If you have stories to tell about how you encountered family meals, either growing up or maybe even now, how are you instituting family meals as part of your children's development in the things that they are learning and growing to participate in? Give us a call. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. Let's go back to the phones now. Barb is calling in from Winfield, Illinois. Hello, Barb. Thanks for calling the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. Well, we had five children, and we had the 80s. They came in the 80s, and but we'd take a turn. Like the oldest son, he was Tony. He had prayers on Monday. Nick had Tuesday. So they each had a particular day. So there were seven of us, and then they led the prayers for that day. And then during the Lenten time, we'd have them pick a Bible verse. And then that we could maybe discuss that at the dinner table, too. So, yes, eating meals together was always very important. And even still now, children are scattered in Arizona and Texas and stuff. But still, when we sit down to eat, we all remember, whose day is it?
Monday, Tuesday, that's very
Wednesday,
good.
You know? So, and we now kind of pass it along to the grandchildren, too. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, Barb, thank you so much for calling in. That is an outstanding tradition, and I'll bet wherever they are scattered around the country, if they're talking to their friends, they'll say, yeah, when I was a kid, I had Wednesday. Wednesday was my day to say the prayer, or I had Thursday. And there's a sense of pride in that it was a sense of ownership, that I had a role in the family, that I had something to contribute. Beautiful, such a simple thing. You know, you say the prayer on Wednesday, and yet that can have a really powerful maturing effect on a child, and a very heartwarming effect on feeling proud of the family that they had that role. So that's wonderful. And then to use some of the liturgical seasons of the years to increase it, you know, like during Lent to have an extra Bible verse or maybe something extra in Advent. Great traditions, Barb. I'm glad you did it. I'm sure that all seven children are very, very, very grateful. And I'm grateful that you called in to share that with us.
Yeah, I love the idea of bringing a Bible verse to talk about too, and I'm wondering, that can be a great way of launching into a discussion about the scriptures and building familiarity with the scriptures, and that's a fantastic idea too. Barb, thank you so much for the call. Really appreciate it. We're talking about family meals today here on The Inner Life, and we're the spiritual director is Father Dave Heaney. So if you have ideas, suggestions about how to further enrich family meals and how to make it a special spiritual time, give us a call and join the conversation at 888-914-9149. Again, 888-914-9149. Maybe you have a question about how to get going with family meals. We're going to talk about that after our next break here coming up. But you can give us a call at 888-914-9149 or send us an email, innerlife@relevantradio.com. We'll be back with more of The Inner Life right after this. Stay with us.
You can hold my hand when you need to let go. I want a house with a crowd.
Our sponsor, the University of Dallas, the Catholic University for Independent Thinkers, invites high school juniors, seniors, and recent graduates to study the great books this summer at UD's two-week-long Arete program while earning 3 hours of college credit. Info at relevantradio.com/UDallas.
So won't you come on in? Supper's almost done. Go ahead and call your friends. We got room. Everyone, let's make some memories around this 9-foot pie. Pull up a chair and stay a while at the family table.
And welcome back to The Inner Life. My name is Patrick Conley. My thanks to Nick Centovich producing our show today and picking some pretty great rejoin music. Thanks, Nick. Thanks for that. And Miranda Sinicero is taking your phone calls today. And our spiritual director today is Father Dave Heaney. Just a quick word. Remember, Walk to Mary is coming up in May. Check it out. Get some of the details. And then if you can, join us. Sign up. Yeah, at walktomary.com. Check it out. We're just registration is open. We are hoping for a great, maybe bigger than ever turnout, especially in this year of Eucharistic revival and the National Eucharistic Congress. Walktomary.com. Check it out. We're talking about having family meals today here on the show. Grateful that you have joined us for that. If you have examples of great things that have happened to you in family meals, give us a call. Love to hear from you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Deb calling in from Minnesota. Deb, welcome to the show.
Oh, welcome. Yeah, I just wanted to share something with you. We have 16 children, and as our family grew, we found that some children, you could just as well think they weren't even at the dinner table, and others that seemed to be the only person at the dinner table. So we implemented something so that we could hear from everyone, and that was just to pass around a two-minute timer. Everyone got 2 minutes to share about their day, and we found that it really helped to those that kind of monopolized the table learn to focus on the most important things in their day, and those that were, like, invisible learn to express with different words the different things that happened in their day. And then on top of that, just the listening skills, because everyone had to listen, which is a challenge for children. And but it helped us keep in touch with our kids. And we had already had the practice of a family meal. We both grew up with that, my husband and I. And we do start and end our meal with prayer. The kids know when they're expected to be at the table and when they can leave the table. So that has been an additional practice that we started with our family that had helped out a lot as the family grew.
Excellent practice, Deb. I'm glad that you did that. I think that's really, really good advice. The two-minute timer is brilliant. It actually reminds me when I was a kid in our table, occasionally somebody would say the word survey, and they would throw out some question. You know, we think that the U.S. government should do this or that. And then we'd go around the table, and nobody could pass. You had to give an opinion. You didn't have to defend it, but you had to say something. And that was a good practice. But I think the two-minute timer that you were talking about is great, because people can know that their time is coming up. They begin to prepare in their mind what they want to say. Those are all good articulation skills and good, you know, really mental forming skills for young children, especially to be able to form their idea. And then they know they have a set time to say it. I think just knowing that they have a set time, that they're not going to be ignored, that they're not going to be talked over, that they're going to have their moment in the sun where they can say whatever's on their mind. So great. I'm glad that you added that, Deb. It's really, really good practice. Some form of that, I think, can be adapted in various different ways in different families, but excellent. The two-minute timer.
Yeah.
What's going on in my life? Perfect.
Yeah, love it. Deb, God bless you. I love the thought. I grew up as an only child, and so we didn't really have a need for a timer at the table and sharing, but I'm grateful that, it's a great practice, great suggestion for large families, and must have been a huge table too, Deb, which is great. It's great to imagine, so thank you for that, Deb. Appreciate that. Let's go now to Gina calling in from San Diego. Good morning, Gina. Thanks for calling the Inner Life.
Good morning. How are you guys this morning?
Great.
Very well.
Good?
Yeah.
Good. I love this topic. I grew up in actually a big Italian Sicilian family, and breaking bread was the most important. We sat down together as a family. We always said the traditional Catholic prayer before we ate as an entire family. We did that. My husband and I did that with our children. We had two sons. We have two sons, and we sat down, we ate a meal, and then we talked, and we maybe play a little game at the table. And then I'd bring fruit to the table, and then we continue conversation. And then the kids learned to pray and thank God for food, no matter what, that we had it, and learning to do the sign of the cross and just being together. And as they grew, you learned about their day. My husband did travel a lot, and it didn't matter. I made a meal every night. I sat with my boys. We sat together, and now our kids are doing that. So our one granddaughter, who is 19 months old, does the sign of the cross, and they sit together as a family and talk. I think it's very valuable. Every parent should be doing something as a meal for their kids, and that's all I had to say.
Beautiful. And, you know, Gina, you had the advantage that I did, too, and that is my grandparents are from Italy. I grew up Italian. I grew up with really very strong Italian traditions. And, of course, one of the strongest Italian traditions is a family meal, especially on Sunday, but really every time. So you and I have that benefit, and we're just kind of sharing that with everyone else that may not have that in their background. But you've been describing just so beautifully all the benefits that you received and how it's an opportunity of great memories for you looking back on how you grew up and everything and what you're providing for your family now. So again, we've been talking this whole time about just all the benefits that happen. And so we hope that people who haven't been doing it will think about it anew and realize that it is, and I really feel it is the one most, if there's one thing that a family can do that is the most powerful, has the biggest long-term effect, and produces wonderful memories for an entire lifetime. It's something that our Lord did often with his disciples, and that's to sit down with them for a meal. So hopefully people will do that. And thank you, Gina, for letting us know the good experience that it was for your life as well.
Appreciate the call, Gina. Thank you so much. Great traditions we're talking about with family meals here on the show today. 888-914-9149 is our number if you'd like to get in on the conversation. And one thing that, as Gina was talking, and even Deb before that with such a large family too, you know what I'm not hearing mentioned in these examples, Father, is I'm not hearing, my kids, well, they're sharing when they have to, but other than that, they're just shoveling food into their mouths as they're looking at their phones. So what do you think, how important is it to keep the dinner table tech-free, Father?
Absolutely, massively important. The family meal is about human beings looking at and talking to each other. So it's very important. You know, a lot of families will have like a basket that they'll put in another room, and all of the phones and devices will go into that basket. You can pick it up afterwards, but they're turned off. The sound is turned off, so you don't hear any ping or phone ring, because it's just this old, beautiful tradition of interacting with each other. There is a big problem in, especially among young people now, that they're really kind of almost losing the ability to have a conversation. To have a conversation with someone else, to follow a topic. You speak, then I speak, then you speak, and I speak, and we kind of progress a topic down the line. That's almost becoming a lost art because people just continually have their, you know, face in their phone. I've seen many times, a bunch of teenagers sitting together, and no one is talking. They're all looking at their own phone. I think this is going to have a serious, not very good effect on their later life, because so much of success depends on interacting with other people at work, especially, or in the family. And so one of the things about a family meal is this whole learning how to talk, learning how to have a conversation, you know, speaking your mind, listening to the other person, the back and forth, old people, young people, male and female, parents and children, et cetera, in-laws. Those are things that make the human person develop and grow. So absolutely no TV, no cell phones in the room at all, someplace else and turned off. So it's no tech dinner.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Father Dave Heaney, who is our spiritual director today, talking about family meals. Let's go back to the phones now. Jose is calling in from Artesia, New Mexico. Good morning, Jose. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. I wanted to share one time when our kids were preteens. We had five children, we were a niece of my wife's from New York City was spending the night with us. And at the supper table, we were amazed to watch Allison, that's her niece, my wife's niece, and just watch our kids talk. And she would just turn from one to the other. You know, she was an only child, and probably they didn't even eat together. And so we were amazed at how she was so amazed at our kids talking at the table.
I mean, that good training that they had an impression on other people. And that's beautiful. Thank you, Jose, for saying that. I'm just glad that the kids had that impact on on the people that watched them, and that they were that they had learned so well, and they learned at the family dinner table. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jose, thank you for the call. I love that the mental image of one child being so overwhelmed with the reality of these other kids who know how to talk at the dinner table, and yeah. It's a great thing. It's a great thing to see. Thank you, Jose, for the call and the testimony. Well, Father, just in the closing moments of the show here, I just was thinking specifically we wanted to focus a little bit. You mentioned some things if families are not in the habit, and it's an easy habit to fall out of with the plethora mm-hmm. of places where we can pick up food these days and just, you know, kind of shovel it down without really thinking about it. It's an easy habit to fall out of the whole idea. So especially amongst the pressures of things like sports and extracurricular activities, how might a family reinstitute or maybe institute for the first time a family meal, whether that's weekly or whatever it might be?
I was thinking, you know, just kind of announcing that the family is now going to get together on a certain night might be a little bit awkward. So you might start with some event where the family is already together. And that example could be like Sunday Mass. So you're already together at Mass. Then that Mass is over, you get back in the car, and then you go to a restaurant for lunch. Easy to do. And then you do that a couple of times, and then you practice that whole experience of a family meal. And then you say, okay, this time after Sunday Mass, we're going to have lunch at home. So now you bring it back home, and then maybe you can transfer it to dinner. So you start with something where you're already together, like at Sunday Mass, and then you can slowly transform that from moving from a restaurant to home. And then you do that a number of times. And again, getting people involved, having the whole family make the meal together, and, you know, making it fun, having maybe an ethnic theme, Taco Tuesday, sushi Sunday, or, you know, pasta, something or other. And I think slowly you can build it that way. So I think, again, you have to go slow and simple. Keep it simple and slow. Don't massively start the big thing right away. But start with an event where you're already together, like Sunday Mass. Or if there's another event, use that. Maybe after you're all together after a sporting event, you know, some kid's softball game. You're all together watching the brother play softball, and then afterwards you go to a restaurant. And then you just kind of move that slowly to the home, because it's really important to have the family meal at a house, at the home where everybody lives. So that's the way I think that they can start. Start simple, start easy, and always make it fun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and so some of the takeaways from our conversation, yeah, just the idea, Father, that you shared about getting the family together, not just to eat the meal, but also to prepare the meal. I think that's great. Mm-hmm. Putting the phones away in a different room with the ringers and the sounds off so they're not being distracting. They're at the table, no TV. Gathering around the table itself, beginning, of course, with prayer, perhaps ending with prayer as well. But then there's a conversation, and especially, again, if the family isn't used to this, if this isn't a tradition or an institution in the household yet, maybe there could be a little bit of a flustering when it comes to, well, what do we talk about? What do we do to maybe head that off? How do we come up with topics?
Always start with what's going on right now, what's current. So could be the family sports schedule, could be homework, could be what's going on at school, it could be what's going on the news if the family is paying attention. But always go with what's current, what's happening in the family right now, because that's more likely to spark conversation because everyone's familiar with what's going on right now. So I wouldn't so much introduce a topic. Okay, tonight we're going to talk about the Eucharist. Tonight we're going to talk about, you know, the creed. That's a little bit too school-like. So I would just say, you know, keep it current. What's going on with the kids? What concerns do they have? How, you know, I never liked asking, how was your day? Because kids often just say, fine. So keeping it current, whatever's going on in the family at that moment, just talk about that. That's very psychologically healthy to do.
Very good. Father Dave Heaney has been our spiritual director for the day. And Father, as you know, we always like to close the show with a blessing. May we ask that of you now, please?
Lord, as you nourish us in love with your body and blood in the Eucharist, may our family meal increase the love in the homes of all our listeners. And we ask this blessing in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.
Amen. And here's finally one final idea. Maybe after family dinner, take part in the Family Rosary Across America. Joel wrote in, he emailed in to say it's the best family prayer there is, so let's all get on board. I agree, Joel. Let's do that after dinner each night. Coming up next is the Holy Sacrifice and the Mass with our spiritual director, Father Ed Looney, and tomorrow, growing in trust and joy. Until then, grace and peace.